As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. I'm super excited today because I am interviewing Natalie Hoffman. I came across Natalie on Instagram and really resonated with her message and passion. She's the author of two books. The first is It Me? Making Sense of Your Confusing Marriage, A Christian Woman's Guide to Hidden Emotional and Spiritual Abuse. And more recently, she's released All the Scary Little Gods, a memoir. She is the host of a Flying Free podcast and is a huge advocate for Christian women suffering from emotional and spiritual abuse. And today she's joining me to discuss her journey of recognizing that she was in an emotionally and religiously oppressive situation. If you'd like to learn more about Natalie or her resources, I've linked them in today's show notes. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Natalie, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to talk to you. I finished your book, All the Scary Little Gods, last night and was blown away. First, by how much I identified with it, but also by how often I hear this same story in the community when I'm talking to others who have been not only abused in their relationship with others, but also just abused in their life, that spiritual abuse seems to be a very common theme, a common experience. So first of all, how did you even start to wake up that there was abuse going on? Because I could tell there was a lot of coercive control happening in your life, which is so subtle and hard to recognize.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it took me a long time. I would never have even, I'm trying to think, even 15 years ago, if you would have used the word abuse, like emotional abuse or spiritual abuse, I would not have really understood what you were talking about. It took a long time because I was raised in a home that was like that. Mm-hmm. So that just felt normal to me. I don't think that the church that I grew up in was very abusive. It was pretty typical, you know, church. They were accepting of most people. But then when I graduated from college, I ended up getting into a church that was it was a former Plymouth Brethren church, but some new people came in and kind of got rid of the head coverings and decided to be seeker sensitive, like Willow Creek.
Yeah.
For anyone who's familiar with that big mega church. So it, you know, the leadership were going to Willow Creek conferences and learning how to do it. And the whole idea was to make yourself palatable to seekers so that you could grow your church. And looking back, there was definitely this drive to grow, to like get a big mega church. And I don't think it was necessarily, I'm not sure if the motive was really to see everyone get saved or if it was just to like that feeling of euphoria when you know that you kind of like on social media, I've got so many followers and now that makes me an important person. I mean, I think a lot of us struggle with that. I don't think pastors are, you know, what's the word I'm looking
immune.
For?
Immune. I don't think they're immune.
Yes, immune. Yeah, They're not immune to that. So one of the pastors was also just one of those very charismatic kind of people. He was a great preacher, but also looking back, very narcissistic. And he had a certain type that he liked to hang around with. And then other types he would completely ignore, like obviously ignore. People would bring it to his attention and then they would be told that they're the problem, that they're looking for the wrong things or they're not trusting God or whatever the case might be. And as a young person, just out of college, I didn't know what to make of that. I was actually one of the people that he was targeting and kind of grooming to sing in the church. I was this young woman. I was vivacious and I had a good voice and people were drawn to me. And so he kind of took me under his wing and started grooming me in that way. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. I liked the attention. I was craving to be accepted and loved because I just grew up in this home where I was never sure if I really belonged. Here, I could finally belong. Mm-hmm. And I think abusive churches kind of, they prey on people who are looking for that place of belonging. It's almost like a cult. They pick up the people who are on the edges that don't have any place to go. And they're like, well, we will love you. Come to us and we'll take really good care of you. You just don't realize that on the other end, you have to drink their Kool-Aid and buy into everything. You know, if you want to continue to stay in their good graces.
Right, right.
So that was kind of the dynamic there. After I got married in that church and then ended up seeing things more clearly, actually, again, not using the word abuse, but probably dysfunctional, maybe. I would have thought of it as being a little dysfunctional. And but here's the kicker. I was becoming more conservative than that church. I was starting to think that church was liberal because we got into the whole Bill Gothard thing. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Bill Gothard?
I am not. No.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's like conservative on steroids. He was a guy who would go around all over the world and have these big, huge, week-long conferences. Every year he came into the Twin Cities and we would fill the stadium. We would fill a stadium. Thousands and thousands of people would come and hear him give a week-long conference. I know one of his famous teachings is the umbrella teaching where God is an umbrella, and then underneath is the umbrella of the husband. He's the head of the home. And then the wife submits to the husband, and then the children submit to their parents. But he was very much into hierarchy. And if you got out from under the umbrella, you were now fodder for Satan to use in whatever way he chose to. So there was a lot of fear mongering and just this feeling that you had to make sure that you stayed submissive to your authority. So even if you weren't married, your authority would be your parents if you were a single person, or your church elders would be your authority.
Right.
So this was drilled into my head from the time I was a small child. So the Bill Gothard thing was very familiar to me. And so we ended up switching churches. I talked my husband into switching churches. He didn't want to. But we just jumped out of the frying pan into the fire in our next church. And I just didn't know it. It all just felt comfortable. And I just made myself right at home and got to know people and was very hospitable and hosted small groups and worked in the church nursery. And we just did all the things. But that church also, there was this undercurrent of you had to follow certain rules. And if you didn't, then you were in danger of being excommunicated or in danger of being church disciplined or in danger of losing your reputation as a godly Christian person. The other thread kind of woven alongside of this thing about the church and the spiritual abuse and the religious trauma is that I was also in an emotionally abusive marriage for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to get help because you can't get divorced. That wasn't even on the table, never even crossed my mind that you could get out of the relationship. So I thought, well, the only hope that I have is to maybe get my church to see that it's bad and maybe they will help my husband change.
Right.
Maybe they'll help him to be a better man at home.
Right.
So I kept reaching out for help and I kept getting the door slammed in my face. I was told if you were a better wife, this wouldn't be happening to you. If you were more submissive, this wouldn't be happening to you. There must be some way in which your tone of voice is when you tell him that he's hurting you. Maybe your tone of voice is making it not palatable to him and he can't hear you. So you need to change your tone of voice. I mean, I read all the Christian marriage books and tried to figure this thing out to try to get the help that I needed so that our marriage could be. And I had 9 kids too. So it was not just my life involved. It was our kids. And as they got older, they were experiencing emotional abuse and trauma. I just kept hitting a dead end. And ultimately, eventually, I realized after going to so many Bible counselors and talking to so many elders and pastors and trying to get help and just hearing the same messages, I think it started dawning on me. I think these people are all behaving the same way that my mom, that I grew up, I've had a mom that behaved that way. And then my husband behaved that way. And now all these people are behaving this way. And I don't think it's me anymore. I know I'm the common denominator in that this is my experience all across the board, but I think these people all have patterns of behavior and they all have the same patterns of behavior. And maybe they're not going to be the ones to rescue me. Maybe I am going to be the one to rescue me by getting myself the Sam heck out of here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was how I got out. And now I'm out and realize that is not the whole world is not made up of people like that. There are amazing people, healthy people out there. Yes, we all have problems, but not everybody is
right
emotionally coercive and controlling, you know,
right.
or I don't know, mean, I guess. There's
right.
a lot of nice people out there. And I am happily remarried and my kids are healing.
You said something that I know mystifies those that have not been in this kind of relationship or this kind of experience. And the outside world looks at those of us stuck in this and say, well, why did you put up with so much? Why didn't you just see it and leave? But you said divorce never even crossed my mind. And I know for me, when I was in that second marriage that was very, very abusive and he was cheating actively, he was a serial cheater. Even though I as a Christian woman knew I had grounds, biblical grounds for it, I still felt like a good woman, a Christian woman, is one who stands by, I like that old country song, stands by her
yes.
man. But more than that, that there's almost like a burden put on women, Christian women, spiritual women, that if they stay, that they can be an influence. They can help save, redeem their partner, their spouse.
Yeah.
Did you get that message? Because I felt like, as even though somebody would say, you have a door, even by your own standards, there's a door right there. It still didn't feel like it existed for me, that a good Christian woman wouldn't take that opportunity.
Right. We were told that you are giving up on God's power to change. Mm-hmm. Doesn't God have enough power to change this person?
Yeah.
And transform? And wouldn't you like to be the catalyst for that change? Like God
right.
wants to use you to be the catalyst for that change. So, well, I believed God could do anything. I mean, God created the universe. Why couldn't he change one person? What I didn't know and what finally changed things for me is that God actually isn't a control freak like all of these other people are. He doesn't control us like puppets.
Yeah.
And if someone doesn't want to change, God is not going to force that person to change. He invites people to change, but he doesn't force people to change. And once I started understanding what boundaries are, and I realized my husband has the right to be exactly who he is. I always tell people in my program, I say, you thought you went to the pet store to get a cat. And what ended up happening is you brought home a duck. But whenever your duck quacks or tracks in mud or is wet and uncomfortable in bed or whatever, that you keep thinking, oh no, there's something wrong here. It should be meowing. It should be soft and cuddly. It should be taking itself to the litter box. Why doesn't it do these things? Because it's not a cat. And banging your head against that wall and expecting it to be a cat is a waste of your emotional energy. Radically accepting that this is a duck. A duck is a duck is a duck. You know, you've heard the saying, if it quacks,
yep.
it's a duck. So when you radically accept that and understand that that boundary is there, and now you can say, okay, that's who he is. Now, who do I want to be? I have control. I don't have control over him. And I no longer believe that God is controlling him because I don't believe God is an abuser, control freak anymore like I used to.
Yeah.
Really, I think a lot of these religious environments, and I do still identify as a Christian, but not that version of Christianity.
Right.
Their view of God is very it's a very narcissistic view of God.
Yeah, I agree.
And they've created this narcissistic God in their own image, quite honestly. And they're reading the Bible through that lens. And I just don't believe that's the way you know, that there are other lenses you can read the Bible through. I choose to believe that God is a lot bigger than that.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have to control everything in order to still be a presence of love and a powerful force in this universe. And that he is, I hate to even put a gender on God anymore, like we have traditionally done, but God doesn't have to do that in order to maintain this love and power in the universe. So even having that boundary around God, or maybe taking the boundary away, I should say, honestly, that God gives all of us freedom to be who we are. But when we're so perseverating on, well, I've got to get these people to believe what I believe, and I've got to get this person to change, and this person shouldn't be doing that. They shouldn't put their kids in public school. They should be homeschooling, and these people should be doing this, and those people should be doing that, and they're out and I'm in, and who else is in with me? This creates so much division in our churches and in our cultures. And that's not what I believe Christianity personally. I don't know that Jesus Christ actually came to this earth in the first place to set up another world religion. I think he was trying to do the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. But instead, people just kind of took his teachings and said, I know, let's make a world religion now out of this. And then they just made another world religion that really is just like every other world religion. It does the same exact things that all of the other religions are doing.
It's created a system that ends up, it's another form of an oppressive system. I read Alice Willard's book, The Divine Conspiracy. He said that God's a gentleman. And I love that. I just thought, what a way to phrase that. God's a gentleman. He said he would never force his will over your will. And I just thought that's so well put. But it's amazing to me how these systems, and I think it's not just a Christian system, but other types of cult or rigid oppressive systems end up kind of pulling us into the belief that somehow we'll get a better life if we follow them. And I could see that thread through your book. It's that the belief that if I could just do it right, or do it perfect enough, or be good enough, then somehow my life will go better. And I think that's a very dangerous, it's a risky position to be in. It's one that I relate heavily to as well, is that I fell into that thinking. And then when things went wrong, I mean, I remember even meeting my second husband, finding out that he had been married 4 previous times and feeling like, wow. Well, that's, you know, a big red flag. And then I actually had a word from God. I don't share this in the book, Love You More, but I had a word from God where I heard him. Sometimes he speaks to me and I heard him say, who are you to declare who's redeemed? And I'm like, ooh, you know, that's not my place to judge other people. But I took as a sign of, oh, then I'm getting the stamp of approval on this guy and this is going to be a great relationship.
Right, right, right.
And then, of course, it goes horribly wrong, you know. And I think the original point was a good point. It checked me on my judgment. I shouldn't judge and throw stones at other people. My life's not any better than anybody else's life. But it didn't mean that I somehow was going to have a perfect life, or that I needed to still be wise and use my wisdom as I approach this relationship and look for signs of risk. Now, there's lots of reasons why I didn't see what I didn't see at that time. But it's amazing how this almost this magical thinking happens, that if I do these things, then I'm going to be safe. And we don't realize, and this is one of the big ahas I've had recently, and it actually came out of talking to Dr. Stern on the gaslighting episode, is that she talks about that whenever somebody forces us into a certain direction that's a violation of us, we're put in a position of, do we preserve the connection with that individual or do we betray ourselves? And when we are forced with that choice, when we betray ourselves, things usually go wrong.
Okay, I want to just jump in here and say this. When looking back on my life, and I think this is true of all people, what we really want deep down inside is to be loved and accepted for who we are. We want to be seen and heard and loved. And you're right. We tend to look for that because kids look for that outside of themselves. Right. They're not resourced and their brain's not online enough to understand that they have that within themselves. But I think all of us, our challenge is to begin to see that God has resourced us within ourselves to get that need met within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And intertwine. I like to think of that God is intertwined with each one of us inside. We don't always experience God because we're not aware. And sometimes different parts of us are so activated that we can't, these child parts inside of us are so activated that we can't experience God, but he's still there. Yeah. God is still there inside of us. offering us that. And when it, for me, it wasn't until I learned how to love myself, how to give those child parts inside of me the mothering that I needed, the unconditional acceptance that I needed, that then I was able to let go of the other people who weren't able to offer that to me and accept that those people can't offer that to me. They don't have the capacity. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they really love themselves. I think that's why they're trying to control me, because maybe in their system, they think if they can control me, that that somehow makes them worthy of living life on earth. Who knows? I don't know. But for me, I have to learn how to look out for myself, have my own back, and not betray myself. Like you said, I need to be able to let them go so that if they do try to gaslight me, if they do present me with that choice, either you betray yourself and get love from me, or you don't betray yourself and you lose my love, that I'm willing to say, I'm okay with losing your love because I know that I have a love inside.
Yep. But here's the part that I realized as that second marriage ended and I had to do this big analysis of what went wrong. And I hadn't realized that I had made this error. And I hear a lot of people make this error. And that is, when we're in these oppressive systems, abusive homes, abusive churches, abusive belief systems, the definition of self, what makes one good and acceptable, is the group approval, the group agreement, not the individual. So I realized that my identity was permeable, that I needed to get the outside stamp of approval. Like you just said, you needed to see the headship idea, that umbrella, that system set you up to say, Natalie, your opinion on whether or not you have a good marriage can't be your own opinion. You need to get outside validation that we agree that this is a bad relationship. Yes. And as a result, when we extend the sense of our self to include these relationships to know that we're good and complete, we don't find it in ourselves. We find it in the group. We find it outside of ourselves, which is what toxic systems want.
Yeah. 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 I do believe that we are made for relationships and connection. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we are counting on, when that's becomes the foundation of who we are, is other people's validation, now we're on thin ice.
But most
because their validation depends on how they're feeling that day.
Exactly. You know? Or how healthy they are. But most of us, I don't think, recognize that we have been taught, trained, or raised up to think this way. Which then that's how we sort of back into these really dangerous dynamics and situations, is because we hadn't realized that, just like what you said, your approval, your love, your coming through for yourself, it's within you. You can find it. It's a muscle you need to learn to grow. But we've been taught, no, I get to weigh in on that. I get to decide what your reality is. I get to decide even what feelings you're having. I get to decide what you're having for breakfast this morning. That's an extension. In a way, ourselves now includes the community as part of us. So for me, I had to, just like I know you talk a lot about boundaries, I had to say, no, Carrie in herself is intact as a person. She can decide to get outside opinions, but she doesn't need them.
Exactly. And you get to decide, when you get those opinions and those ideas, you get to weigh out which parts of that you want to adopt or agree with, and which parts you're like, necessarily agree with that. I think they're off a little bit. You mentioned that as far as the church goes, like, I don't go to church anymore. I don't go to like traditional church. COVID, I think, did a service to many of us who were not sure what we thought about church anymore, but we just kept going because it's what you do.
Yeah.
And then when COVID hit, it became acceptable not to go. And so after a year and a half of sort of detoxing from that, I decided not to go back. I got remarried. My new husband, he agreed with me. He's like, yeah, I don't really see the point. So I actually meet on Sunday mornings with an online group of women and we have conversations, but I don't miss it. My relationship with God is closer and better than ever. And I don't miss the church aspect. Church felt more like a club to me. Mm-hmm. And when I would go to church after all of the trauma that I experienced, I was excommunicated eventually. I would go to church and I would be suspicious of everybody anyways. I would walk through church and I would just be on hyper alert of who's pretending, are they being genuine? Are they being a fake? What do they want from me? What's their agenda? I didn't know. And I was sick of feeling that oppression. Even if they were a real genuine person, how was I supposed to know? Now I have to build trust with them in order to figure it out. I don't have time or capacity for that in my life.
Yeah.
I wanted to say too, with my kids, because I had 9 kids, and they, my relationships with them, as I learned, because I was a mother who was doing the same things to them that the church was doing to me. I was teaching them all these things and brainwashing them with all these things. And they were growing up with the same fears and shame that I had grown up with. And once I broke out of it and started healing inside of myself and healing my idea of who God was and my relationship with God, now I could hold space for my kids and where they were coming from. So all of my kids have a wide range of ideas of what they think about God. Ironically, those who were raised in the brainwashing system, one of them doesn't even necessarily believe in God at all anymore. You know, that's kind of where he is at in his journey. Mm-hmm. Others are like, I'm not really sure what I believe. I'm trying to figure it out. Some go to church. Some do not go to church. Some may never go back to church again. And I now, as I'm okay with all of it. And my kids feel safe. We have very fascinating conversations around all of this because we're all in a much more curious place. We're all in a more compassionate space for one another. And we're all very open to this is a journey. It's not a one and done, like pray the prayer and now you're saved and everything is all fixed in your life. Mm-hmm. And if it's not fixed, then what are you doing wrong? Maybe you didn't obey one of the 5,000 rules that we have over here. And let's take a look at those. It's not like that anymore. It's, I don't know how to describe it, but it's fantastic and very, very healing for all of us. And then I'm raising my younger children in a very different environment. Mm-hmm. And even though my 4 youngest do go to a very conservative Baptist school in the neighborhood, we have such interesting conversations about what they bring home that they're learning in Bible class. Or, you know, some people say, well, why do you have them in a place like that when that's something you've deconstructed out of? And I'm like, I don't have to be afraid of that.
Right.
My kids don't have to be afraid of that. We don't have to be afraid of being brainwashed when we maintain the idea that these are things that some people, a handful of the billions of people in the world believe. And then there's all these other billions of ideas too. And why do we have to be afraid of them? Let's look at all of them. Let's find out. There's some very good, important things that come out of that little Baptist way of thinking that I think are benefiting my kids in important ways, that benefited me in important ways. And also, that's not all there is. There's other things that they will learn as they go on their journey in life.
It's amazing how when you let go of an oppressive system, an oppressive style of thinking, to how more compassionate and loving and open you become, which really to me is the point of the story of Christ in the first place, that you become more Christ-like in that process. I mean, when I listen to you describe that, I'm thinking, yeah, that's the example that I saw him set in the gospel, is that kind of a presentation. It's amazing that it's scary to let that frame go because it gives guidelines. You feel, you know, you're on the road and that road's supposed to lead to heaven. And we all hear about the narrow gate and the wide gate, you know, and you want to find that right path. But it really, when we let that go, it's amazing that we become the very thing that we were supposed to have been in the first place. And I love how that's how that story leads up to that. Thank you so much for joining us today. I also do a podcast extra, and I love to have you join me now. We're going to close this out to jump over to talk about how to recognize if you're in a spiritually oppressive or even an oppressive belief system. So I'd love to kind of open that communication up, but we're going to close this. But thank you so much for being my guest. I could talk to you for hours. I know that already. There's so much more to say.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's been great.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.